There are two very important things coming out of the conference. One is that there's, again, affirmation that it is indeed possible to end the AIDS epidemic. And then linked to that, a very, very strong focus on the importance of human rights, you know, evidence and human rights-based laws and addressing issues of vulnerable populations. And that's a very strong focus at the conference. And looking at what is the role of lawmakers, what is the role of policymakers in ensuring that we've got the right kind of legal frameworks that are based on evidence and human rights principles, as opposed to myths and fear and prejudice, and the role that these lawmakers can play in contributing to the end of the AIDS epidemic.
Can you give us an example of how laws can help eradicate HIV and AIDS in societies?
For example, on the one hand, here we are spending billions of dollars on HIV prevention and treatment services, and on the other hand, you've got laws and law enforcement practices which really drive people underground and away from services. So actually, if you don't criminalize and you don't have law enforcement, which is brutal and is punishing people instead of helping them get to health services, you would actually be getting a better return on your investment on your AIDS dollars. Where you decriminalize same-sex sexual conduct, for example, where you ensure that police protect vulnerable populations as opposed to punishing them, actually you get better access to services. You get people who are more likely to show up in health services. So that has a direct bearing on your ability to prevent and control the epidemic.
When do you think the shift happened? Why are participants at the debate more open to discussing the role of law in eradicating AIDS or the role of policies?
I think over the last few years, there's been a growing chorus really on these issues. I think the barriers are starting to come to the fore much more. We've also seen, you know, the direct impact in many places of punitive legislation on HIV programs. There's more evidence of the relationship between law, you know, human rights and HIV. In 2012, there was an independent commission of eminent people. It's called the Global Commission on HIV and the Law, that released a very important report looking at the relationship between law and HIV responses. So I think the evidence has been building, and, you know, we're at a stage now where we're really, the investments in HIV are not increasing at the same rate as they were before. There's a stronger focus on looking at how we can be more efficient and more effective in our responses. So I think all of these factors have led to the stage now where we just cannot ignore the issues of human rights and gender equality and marginalized populations anymore.
What happens before the end of the conference? Are there certain decisions that are going to be made on this topic?
There's an important declaration that's being signed, the Melbourne Declaration. There are, you know, well over 2,000 endorsements already calling for more investment in, more focus on human rights, evidence-based programming, investing in gender equality, making sure that we increase the coverage of quality services for the most marginalized and the most excluded. So it's an important policy intervention, this declaration, which will hopefully help us move things along.
And what has been your role during this conference?
UNDP was represented at the conference by the administrator, Helen Clark, and, you know, we've participated in a number of events relating to the role of lawmakers, issues of law, on a range of issues. We've also been talking about human rights and law and in the context of post-2015. So we've been participating in the substantive sessions and discussions around these issues.
What does UNDP want the public to take home from this debate?
What we'd like the public to take home now is that 30 years on into the epidemic, we cannot ignore human rights issues, that we really have to make sure that, first of all, we're investing in human rights programming, and secondly, that we are making sure that we have enabling legal frameworks and policy frameworks which help people get to services as opposed to blocking their access to services. That's the main message.
Is there something that you'd like to add?
I guess the final thought would be that, flowing from what I've just said, it means that we need more than just the health sector to be involved. We need affected communities to be involved. We need lawmakers, police, ministries of justice, so people who you wouldn't have traditionally thought as being part of some kind of a health sector response. We need these broader partnerships if we're going to end the epidemic.